And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman and Hagman Report for tonight. And I'll tell you, we've got a great program for you planned. A lot of news, a lot of things happening. My goodness. Folks, you can catch us live, of course, Monday through Friday. That's every weeknight, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network. That's the place to be. Really populated by a lot of great shows. Websites, HagmanandHagman.com, show information, and showprephagmanreport.com. A lot of things to get into tonight, of course, Hagman and Hagman Report, the premier investigative reporting team of Doug and Joe Hagman. So glad that you're able to join us tonight. So much to get into. It seems like Rush Limbaugh is getting on the trail of Benghazi. I don't know how many people have heard him or heard him today. Welcome to the party, Rush. That's all I've got to say. Welcome to the party. Rush Limbaugh breaking his silence, saying, hey, you know what? Julian Assange of WikiLeaks claims that there are a whole lot of emails coming out. Well, 17,000 over 17,000 alone on Benghazi, on Libya, and Gaddafi by Hillary Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton. But before we get into all of that, I just want to let you know that tonight, the program unfolds, we're going to have our segment number two, we're going to have Ross Powell joining us to talk about various issues, including but not limited to the state of the economy and what is being proposed to take money out of your pocket and how to survive. But very interesting information. Ross Powell solo. And hour number three is going to be Stan Dale, but I want to make sure that you know today is Steve Quayle, my good friend, my brother, his birthday. How many people send him birthday wishes today? All right, by email. Happy birthday, Steve Quayle. And, of course, he's not going to be on with us as expected. Actually, he was being surprised by his wife. Yay, he's taking some time off. Joe, welcome to the program.
Great to be here tonight. It's going to be an information-filled program. As you said, Ross Powell from Survival 401k will be joining us.
Talking about
the state of the economy, the potential for economic chaos, and martial law.
Can it be? We can have it?
Possibly.
All right.
And Stan Dale will be joining us in hour number three. Now, what we're going to do tonight is in the first segment of our third hour, Stan is going to talk about a few things. And what we're going to do in the second half, the last 26 minutes of the show, is take listener questions via phone calls for Stan.
Now, you know what?
We're going to open the phones from 9:30 to 10, maybe 9:20 to 10, so we can get callers lined up for people who have topical, quick questions for Stan.
Yeah, and please make them brief. Please make them concise. Please make them topical as well. And that would be for Stan Dale, starting at about 9:20 or 20 minutes into the first segment. But we've got a lot of information to get into.
Where do you want to start today?
Some of the news headlines. Let's go over. Let's talk about. Let's just give a rundown of the hot headlines.
All right. We have a number of interesting headlines. I want to start here. There has been Donald Trump has come out and talked about the possibility for electronic voting machines to be rigged and this to be a rigged election. Well, Wired magazine and published on Wired.com did a story, America's electronic voting machines are scarily easy targets. So as you see in the news, all this talk about Trump and how crazy he is to say that the election could be rigged, outside of just the populist and electoral vote is crazy nonsense. Wired magazine has a different take. This week, GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump openly speculated that this election would be rigged.
Absolutely.
Last month, Russia decided to take an active role in our elections. There's no basis for questioning the results of a vote that's still months away, but the interference and aspirations do merit a fresh look at the woeful state of our outdated, insecure electronic voting machines. Now, this article goes on to lay out different scenarios and ways that it's possible to rig the system, the vulnerabilities of the machines, and I mean, it's been proven. It has been proven. And they stated cases such as the 2000 election with Al Gore and the hanging chads, which led to a Bush-Gore deadlock where a president was not declared for some 40 days, I believe, until the Supreme Court ruled on it and Al Gore, you know, backed down. But there is merit to what Trump is saying about the potential for voting machines to be rigged. Now, while we're talking about Trump, Obama had some remarks about Trump today that were very interesting, to say the least. Obama said Trump is unfit, woefully unprepared for presidency. Has to be a point where Republicans say enough. Now, Alex Jones and Infowars.com did a story on this, where they put a different spin on this, where many were just pointing out how Obama said Trump was unfit to be president. Infowars, and Alex Jones did a piece, written by Kit Daniels, that says this, and I like this: Obama signals Trump will win. The Kenyan king resorts to desperation as Hillary falls behind. And it goes on to talk about if the election was already in the bag for Hillary, why would Obama be working overtime to convince the GOP to dump Trump? Instead, he'd be encouraging Trump to speak out more if his words were helping Hillary. But that is not the case at all. So what we saw today was Obama signaling that the globalists are losing and Hillary is falling too far behind for the technocrats to rig the election in her favor. Now, I'll disagree with that last statement because I don't think there's any... It doesn't matter how far behind she can fall or does fall. If they want her in as president, she will be put in as president.
Well, and it's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that because Francis Hollande says America's elections are global. This is okay. So explain to me, and look, folks, the globalists are on the run. We've got them on the run, or at least they should be. At least in my estimation,
they're going to make it appear that way.
Well, okay, fine, but see, Trump does pose a threat, and the movement behind Trump poses a threat. The veil is being lifted. This Hollande saying Trump excesses in U.S. elections make him sick. All right. Yeah. This is absolutely incredible, but the fact is the globalists have a death grip on their power. But
Eric,
all of this.
Can you see my screen?
All of this.
Okay. I don't know if you want to put this up here on the YouTube screen. And folks, you can go to redstatewatcher.com and check out an article titled New Rally Photos Emerge, and it's startling. It's starting to become really embarrassing for Hillary. Now, these, as Trump overflows stadiums, Hillary can't fill a classroom. Do we need more evidence that she is rigging the system? There was a rally held in an Omaha high school where she appears to fill a quarter of the gym. And if you scroll down a little bit, there was a rally in Johnstown, PA, yesterday, where there are maybe 10 rows of folding chairs partially filled up. While Trump is filling stadiums, while Trump is filling, concert halls, to the point where fire marshals are turning people away and shutting his number of attendees. Oh, yeah. An example, we talked about this yesterday. There was a venue Trump was going to speak at that was able to hold up to 6,000 people. The fire marshal closed the door at 1,000 people. So Trump can't find enough seats for his audience. Hillary can't find enough audience for her seat. Yet we're supposed to believe there is a national tie amongst these two candidates.
Indeed.
Something to keep your eye on.
Yes.
Now,
go ahead.
Back to the WikiLeaks cables. I don't know how much you want to get into this now.
This is my segment, man. Okay. I gotta get into this. In fact, let's roll in my corner here. I want to do my corner. All right.
Now, I got a question. Do folks on the Global Star Radio side get the?
They hear nothing.
Okay, so the awkward silence, if there is any. Folks, if you go to YouTube and watch the video, but as we've reformatted the show, Eric has put together some awesome graphics that segue the titles of these segments.
That's right. But anyway.
Look at that. Ringside.
That's right. But here's the deal, folks, and I want to get into this because I think this merits a segment, and I've said this before. I believe I've been on the cutting edge of this. Again, not to say, you know, how great I am, but the fact of the matter is we have been bamboozled. Now, Rush Limbaugh came out today. And in fact, it's on his website where he posted a transcript. And I think the title is, Did Hillary Run Guns Out of Benghazi? Well, welcome to the party, Rush.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the party. Here's the deal. Rush gets into this. He writes, or he stated that during his broadcast, that Julian Assange at WikiLeaks claims that there are a whole lot more emails coming. And there are, in fact, according to our sources.
23,035 cables. Have been released by WikiLeaks that prove Clinton knew emails were marked classified when she sent and received them.
But specific to Libya, specific to Benghazi, mm-hmm. 17,000 plus are involved or are related to Benghazi. Now here is why this is important. Limbaugh is coming out on this, and here is why we're not getting the entire truth about this. In my segment, in my corner, I'm going to take on here the globalist, political mouthpieces, the talkers who do not and have not to this point given this much time. And it's unfortunate, but the Gang of Eight know about this. The reason, the entire reason that this has been hidden, this has been a globalist operation. Back prior to Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton became Secretary of State, one of her duties was to topple Assad in Syria. And remember, folks, I had written back prior to Benghazi and subsequent to Benghazi, the attacks thereof, that it was all about Syria. Now Rush today comes on his program and says, look, there are, there's so much about Benghazi, but not so much what you think of when you hear Benghazi. In other words, he's starting to come around and say, oh, wait, maybe there was another reason. And he said this. He asked, have you ever stopped to ask yourself, what were they doing there? Meaning, of course, the American, Stevens and the CIA complex. And he said that, we had just wiped out Gaddafi. Terrorism rose up in that country, out of control. It was a hellhole. His words, not mine. It was a dangerous place to be, he said. There was no reason to have a State Department annex anywhere near an embassy in Benghazi. Okay, Rush, a little geography lesson. You've got Benghazi, pretty much on the eastern, the eastern side of northern Libya, and then you've got Tripoli much further to the west. So, but he says, nonetheless, there was no reason for it diplomatically, and that's true. There was no diplomatic reason for any presence in Benghazi, especially in Benghazi. All right? Now, think about this. Now Russia's coming around, and he's saying, okay. In the aftermath of ousting Gaddafi, which Hillary Clinton, to this day, claims was a major foreign policy achievement. Folks, she is running her campaign on the fact that they got rid of Gaddafi in Libya, and that is a good thing. Well, as it turns out, it's not. And as Rush points out in his statement today, Rush points out that Gaddafi post Saddam, post Iraq came around. Well, it happened before that, Rush, because Gaddafi, post 9/11, was furnishing American intelligence with intelligence about the terrorists, various Islamic terrorists. Of course, his mind was changed. You have to remember, go back to when Reagan bombed his tent that contained his daughter. But the fact of the matter is, what Rush Limbaugh had said today, and I don't think, Rush, obviously you're not listening, but maybe some of your producers are. We do know that at least one of the people associated with the Limbaugh program does listen. But the fact of the matter is, Rush, that we were on this before. Yes, there was a gun running operation out of Benghazi. That's what Benghazi was all about, and they were arming the Syrian rebels. But the reason you're not hearing this, and the reason that the Republicans and really the entirety of Congress has been ineffective in investigating this, it's not because they're incompetent. It's because they are complicit. When you consider that there is something called the Gang of Eight. It's a colloquial term for a group of eight leaders within the United States Congress who are briefed on matters of intelligence. And what we have here is this group of eight lawmakers in Congress who sit down with the president and are briefed on matters specific to, specific to matters of intelligence. And the Gang of Eight includes the leaders of each of the two parties from both the Senate and the House of Representatives, and the chairs and ranking minority members of both the Senate Committee and House Committee for Intelligence, as set forth in 50 U.S.C. Section 413B. Now, the president in this case is required under law to ensure that congressional intelligence committees are kept fully and currently informed of the intelligence operations and activities inside and outside of the United States. More outside, obviously, but inside on the domestic side. However, under 50 U.S.C. 413B and C, the president, the man in the White House, may elect to report instead of the Gang of Eight under extraordinary circumstances when he thinks it's essential to limit access to information about a covert action. And this is exactly, ladies and gentlemen, what happened with Libya. This is why the various committees are not effective on Benghazi. You will never get the truth on Benghazi, because the Gang of Eight, that includes Devin Nunes, Adam Schiff, Richard Burr, Dianne Feinstein, Paul Ryan, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, and Harry Reid, those eight individuals were not just informed, but they were complicit in the gun smuggling, gun running operation out of Benghazi, Libya. They were complicit in taking down Libya. I had reported on this consistently at CanadaFreePress.com. All you have to do is search CanadaFreePress.com, Benghazi, and you will see that my intelligence source was 100% correct. 100% correct. The very intelligence source that has been assailed and insulted and taken to task by various bloggers who are essentially working for the Clinton team. Mm-hmm. And this is important for everyone to understand. When you get this level of hatred by these people, by these bloggers, by these journalists, these so-called investigative journalists who are working as waitresses or waiters or boxer or busboys. And I don't mean to denigrate that position, because my goodness, I would put them far and above that position, far and above these people who are masquerading as investigative journalists. The fact of the matter is, they are being paid by the Clinton camp. They are being paid by the globalists to take down the information about Benghazi and say, no, this is not true. You are wrong. Now Rush Limbaugh comes today, August 2nd, 2016, and says, wait. There's more to it. There's more to it.
Does Rush mention Hillary Clinton's interview with Chris Wallace?
Well, that's something totally different, but
yes. Well, no, I understand, because this gets into another parent of a Benghazi victim, and this is Mr. Charles Woods, father of Tyrone Woods, one of the Benghazi soldiers killed on September 11th, 2012.
Yes. He gets into it separately, but the fact of the matter is this. He talks about Charles Woods, where he said that, yeah, either
well, Clinton was,
Clinton
interviewed
was lying
Wallace.
Then or now.
Clinton was interviewed by Chris Wallace on Sunday.
Right.
During the conversation, Chris Wallace asked Clinton, about Benghazi, and Clinton suggested that she had not lied to the Benghazi victims' families and told them the terror attack was actually the spontaneous reaction to an offensive internet video. She held no ill feeling toward family members because their memories must just be fuzzy, she insisted.
Yeah, fuzzy math, fuzzy memories, and...
It's on the record. Right.
Charles Strange, in Extortion 17, gave a good indication how Obama lied, and the Gold Star mothers of the Tyrone Woods and Darty and others that were killed in Benghazi certainly have outed Clinton for the liar that she is.
Yeah.
Okay, but here, Rush goes and talks, and in fact does mention about Mr. Woods, but the fact is, Rush defers to an article in the National Review saying, hey, apparently Hillary Clinton's Benghazi debacle, arming jihadists in Libya and Syria, WikiLeaks is proving it to be true. Folks, we had this 2-3 years ago. We had this right after the attacks. The 9/11, the September 11th, 2012 attacks in Benghazi, Libya. We had this information. We didn't spend, $1.5 million or $1 billion with all of these committees, these Senate committees. We had this information. We delivered it to you directly on a silver platter through our reporting and my articles at CanadaFreePress.com and at HagmanReport.com. It's there. We told you that we were running guns out of Libya in arming the Syrian rebels, Syrian terrorists, that is. We told you that we were going to be facing Russia face-to-face, toe-to-toe, in Syria. We are today. We told you that this was a proxy war between the United States and Russia. It is today. Andy McCarthy now from the National Review is starting to admit it. Rush Limbaugh is saying, hey, wait a minute, there must be something to this. Of course there is. And again, just to quote Bruce Willis, welcome to the party, pal.
About 5 years too late.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing. The complicity, and this is why, in my corner here, in Doug's little ringside corner, here's what I'm saying to everyone. You're not going to get the truth from this Congress. You're not going to get the truth from any elected official or any appointed official in Washington, D.C., and the reason is they were in on it. The House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, the United States Select Committee on Intelligence, the leadership in the U.S. House of Representatives, and the representatives and the leadership in the United States Senate, whether it's Paul Ryan formerly, or Harry Reid, or Mitch McConnell, or Nancy Pelosi, they all knew about the gun running operations, and they signed off on it, if you will. The Gang of Eight signed off on it. The U.S. Armed Forces, the United States military, and combined with Western intelligence that include intelligence from the Great Britain, from France, from Israel, and as much as it, you might say, oh my goodness, don't say that, that's so anti-Semitic, folks, this is a globalist initiative. But now Andy McCarthy, cited by Rush Limbaugh, is coming out and saying, hey, we did, WikiLeaks now, okay, they're giving us the emails. You wanted, people said, well, where's the proof? We told you there was proof. We told you there were documents. We told you that there were emails coming out. Now, it's confirmed, over 17,000. And of course, WikiLeaks has them. And hence the reference by Donald Trump to Russian intelligence. You don't think that Russia has them? The attacks in Benghazi, Russia knew exactly what we were doing. Russia knew that we were going toe-to-toe with them. They were supporting Assad. They did not want to see ISIS, the Islamic terrorist, topple Assad. Russia knew, Russia said, told Obama, what are you doing? Asked him, what are you doing? Told Hillary Clinton, what are you doing? Are you nuts? Because you take out If you destabilize Syria like you did Libya, if you destabilize Libya like you did the rest of the entirety, really, of the Middle East, you are going to empower ISIS, and that is exactly what they did. But it was just not Obama, and it was just not Hillary Clinton. It was Devin Nunes. It was Adam Schiff. It was Richard Burr. It was Dianne Feinstein. It was Paul Ryan. It was John Boehner. It was Nancy Pelosi. And it is all of the above. And Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid, they're all in on it, folks. This is bigger than you can imagine. But Hillary Clinton, of course, is in fact the orchestra, the conductor of this orchestra. You see, again, Rush Limbaugh now saying, hey, there is something there. I direct your attention very quickly back to the ship, El Intisar. September 6th, 2012. Recall that. The El Intisar. 35 miles south of the Syrian border in Turkey. Caught in port. With millions. Millions of pounds of weaponry headed to the Syrian terrorists, now known as ISIS. That was one of the final shipments of weapons, not because of the exposure from Benghazi, but because the operation was over. That was the construction, or the deconstruction, the devolving of the weapon transfer of the arming of ISIS. And Hillary Clinton and Obama and the Republican Democratic senators are front and center, right there, front and center. We are winning the information war. We are winning the information war. We are getting people out there. It's because of you folks. It's because of every one of you who tune into this program and say, you know what, there's more news than, there's more information than there is on the evening news, on the cable news networks. Certainly there's more information here than the political theater we get with some of the big talkers. Let's get into really the news behind the news. And of course, Joe's got a lot of headlines. We've got a lot of headlines, a lot of news to talk about here in this next segment.
Yeah, we do. There is some news out of the Clinton camp. Now, I saw this earlier today. There has been some changing of leadership at the DNC due to the email hack. Now, people have been talking about the DNC being hacked, possibly by Russia. I don't know if you saw it today, but the NSA has come out and admitted that they were the ones that hacked the DNC.
It's, Joe, it is all a CIA / NSA / globalist operation. Yes, blame Russia. Look, that's what the template is the same, folks. Let's blame Russia. Let's blame a foreign government. Not that Russia doesn't have its hands dirty. Of course they do. But isn't it easier to blame Russia for this than it is to sit back and say, well, yeah, you know, hey, my name's John Brennan. Testifying before the House Committee, Senate Committee, or Senate Committee on Intelligence, and yes, we hacked the DNC emails. Counselor, go ahead. Wait a minute. I'm getting told in my ear by my counselor sitting next to me, I shouldn't have said that. I'm going to plead the fifth. Of course, it's Russia. It's Russia. No, it's not. It's our own government. It's the globalists. It's the criminal cabal within our government. It's the globalists who are attacking, who are, in this case, exposing the criminality, right? I mean, are they not?
Oh, absolutely. All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
and what we're seeing here is, there's been a prominent, Associated Free Press Clinton researcher found dead.
Oh.
Today, an AFP investigative reporter, prominent Clinton researcher, and prolific author, Victor Thorne, was found dead of an apparent victim of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Prolific author, American Free Press writer, and seasoned Clinton researcher, Victor Thorne was found dead at the top of a mountain near his home, the victim of an apparent suicide via gunshot wound to the head. Family and some close friends contend Thorne took his own life on his birthday, August 1st, which he would have been 54. During his career, he was the author of some 20 books and numerous newspaper articles for decades and decades. Best known for his investigative research on the Clintons, Thorne wrote the Clinton Trilogy, three definitive works that delve into the history of the power couple, including the scandals, from Bill's sexual scandals with multiple women to the drug running out of Mena, Arkansas, while Clinton was governor.
9/11?
Besides writing for AFP, Thorne published the works of numerous writers in alternative media, such as Michael Collins Piper, Mark Glenn, and many others. And it's just very odd timing, in my opinion, to see somebody who has built a career out of investigating and exposing Hillary Clinton to be found dead, not only on his birthday, but on top of a mountain, Vince Foster style, with self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. It is something that is definitely going to take need a deeper look into. You know, we're going to continue to look into this, but also with the emails with Hillary Clinton.
Wait a second. Let's not move from Thorne too quickly, because you can bet your bottom dollar that people are going to say, well, suicides happen, and they do.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at this, and I don't know, folks, I'm going to put this call out there. If there are any professors of mathematics, okay, and I'm not seriously
statistics.
Yes,
yeah,
experts in statistics. What I would like to see the statistical probabilities. What do you think? If we took everyone that's, because look, I suppose being the President of the United States, or being the Speaker of the House, or whatever position you might hold, or Secretary of State, wouldn't you have, you would know everybody just about, right? You'd be in contact with everybody. But how would that play out? What criteria, as a statistician, what criteria would you use to ferret out the people that are not really, you know, that don't matter? Here's my question, folks. If anyone is, and here's my plea, if there's any person out there who's a professor, who's got a degree, I mean, who's got the ability to run the stats on the numbers, on the people surrounding Clintons, or maybe you already have. I'd love to see the numbers.
There has to be reports out there. I mean, there has to be. Somebody has had to do the research already
for the
Clinton body count that we've heard and know about, that continues to rise and grow.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure that this is something that's been looked into, and people have been working on it or have done work on it.
Yeah, yeah. I really would like to see that, because I think that We've got to be entering here into we're already in a banana republic, but we've got to be entering into a period that you've got the barbell on the throat of the UN guy. You have, of course, the Deadpool list by the Clintons, which has been published, or, you know, and updated. But now you're getting more and more as the Clintons are going into the timing of the presidential, race.
Mm-hmm.
For the elections. So, yeah, all right. Go ahead. I'll put the call out there. So if you are a published, or, you know, a tenured, mathematician, professor, I'd love to be able to, talk to you about the statistical probabilities of the deaths. Come on, sir.
Well, there's, more news, out of the DNC email, situation. The chief executive of the Democratic National Committee and two other top officials have resigned in the wake of an email hack that embarrassed the party on the eve of its presidential nominating convention. CEO Amy Dacey, Chief Financial Officer Brad Marshall, and Communications Director Louis Miranda left their jobs on Tuesday, the party said in a statement. The resignations are the latest fallouts from the hacked emails, which exposed an apparent lack of neutrality in the primary race between Clinton and Bernie Sanders, with some party officials disparaging Sanders. Now, yesterday, there was an article here, maybe it was a day before that, that I found that gets into this, how in bed the Democratic National Convention was in with Hillary Clinton, to the point that they basically had her as the nominee before the primaries even started. And we know Planned Parenthood from those Center for Medical Progress videos, and Cecil Richards came out and said, you know, she will be the nominee. Now, WikiLeaks, in the WikiLeaks dump, they had also exposed this fact that the DNC is actually working with CBS to construct specific working of how poll data should be presented to the CBS news audience in order to manipulate socially the minds of voters out there to make it appear as though Hillary Clinton was already winning or had won the nomination when Bernie Sanders still had a shot and was winning more states than Clinton.
Right. Right.
Now, there is a number of articles, but one of the ones that I have read is the Conservative Treehouse.
That's an interesting site for, despite its name, Conservative Treehouse. I don't find it all that conservative by many of the contributors, but it's an interesting site for statistics and for numbers and for background information. It's a good resource. Go ahead.
They label this as media agenda polls, the type of collusion that was outlined in this article, and they talk about how promoting data based on an agenda is immoral and untruthful, yet the practice has been continued, and has, as we see with the polls today, they say since the Democratic National Convention that Hillary Clinton has gained a 7-point lead over Trump, and there has been, you know, nothing as far as I can see that would have changed any minds in any capacity from either convention. But moving on with more Hillary Clinton news and NAFTA and free trade. I found this article very interesting from citizensgroup.us. NAFTA cost the U.S. 56,190 factories, not jobs, factories.
57,000 factories.
And made Hillary Clinton a billionaire.
Well, wait a second. She was broke when she left the White House, when her and Bill left the White House.
That's why she stole all the furniture and everything.
That's right. And yeah.
Well, what this article lays out is it says that the free trade agreements have been a huge boom for the wealthiest of the wealthy and a disaster for the rest of us Americans, especially those who are employed. In the weeks before Valentine's Day, United Technologies expressed its love for its devoted Indiana employee workers whose labor had kept their corporation profitable by informing 2,100 of them at two facilities at their shipping factories that they were shipping their jobs to Mexico. 3 days later, 1,300 workers at a Philadelphia manufacturing Cardone learned that the company planned to throw them to Mexico also. Here in where we live in Pennsylvania, GE has been shipping jobs overseas by the boatload. It seems like every month there's hundreds, if not thousands, of more jobs being shipped out of the country. Now, the manufacturing sector of this country was gutted when the NAFTA and GATT and these free trade agreements went into effect. Now, the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the Transatlantic Trade Agreement are going to complete the globalization of the job market in the sense that manufacturing will be completely removed from the United States. Robots will be the workers in, you know, fast food restaurants and places where you go buy things from a cashier. You will have outsourcing customer service like you do now, but everything is made everywhere else.
But
we're going to be the biggest importer pretty soon,
rather than
the biggest exporter, which China took over last year.
Right. Now, I think it's important for people to understand that Sharia law, okay, you've got the Hegelian dialectic, and the influx, Joe, of aliens into this country, especially Muslims, by a 99 to 1 margin, 99.5 to 0.5 margin, plays a role into exactly what you're saying. And people don't make this connection. And I think this is important. 57,000 factories blown out of the water with, you know, from NAFTA. Now, NAFTA,
yeah,
that's
not
a
jobs,
long,
factories.
Right. But here's the Hegelian dialectic, synthesis and antithesis, and of course the, you've got the imposition or the influx of Sharia, of Sharia and Muslim values in direct opposition to not just the moral, spiritual, and ideological, Judeo-Christian leanings, but it's anti-capitalism as well. If you look at their platform,
yeah, and which we need to dig deeper into the two-party system. When you look at the Republicans and the Democrats, people have a skewed view of the history of the two political parties. The Democrats were never champions of civil rights until late 60s when they co-opted the movement.
Thank you
Republicans
for bringing that
up. Were the party that freed the slaves. The Democrats were the party that wanted to continue to have slaves.
Right.
And just to give you an idea of how, you know, these Democrats talk about, you know, everything needs to be fair and everybody deserves a fair chance and this and that. Well, what they've done is take manufacturing jobs out of the U.S. for the profit and lining the pockets of the heads of these companies to where you'd have to pay somebody at least minimum wage here, which is almost $8 or $7.25. But what they're doing now is companies are going to Mexico, being able to pay Mexican workers only $3 an hour.
And there's no
doing it in over 36
countries.
This one company here, United Technologies, is doing this in over 36 countries.
Right.
In order to line their own pockets. Now, as Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton sought to build on her husband's NAFTA gains by writing the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Correct.
And the TPP would worsen the situation and would give corporations like United Technologies the option of moving to places like Vietnam, where they could pay traffic workers and child laborers $1 an hour or less. So now the TPP passes. Now the people who had factory and manufacturing jobs in Mexico are going to see those jobs and those factories shipped to countries where child slave labor is okay. And this is all being done by the Democratic agenda, who stands for human rights and equality and all the things that this isn't.
Well,
it's just hypocrisy at its finest.
And I think what we need to do as well.
And
go on.
The last fact, the Clinton Foundation has made over $1 billion with a B since the passing of NAFTA, and the Clinton Foundation has actually grown by over 1,000% since Obama became president. In 2003, it was reported of a value of less than $100 million. Today, it's over $1 billion.
$2.5 billion, I believe, according to the latest book, and the latest Clinton Cash, I think, also makes reference to it. But the amount of money is staggering, and only 10%, less than 10%, if it was a charity or it being a charity, less than 10% actually makes it to the actual cause. That's of the Clinton Global Initiative.
And the last statistic I'll give from NAFTA is that NAFTA increased the wealth of the top 1% by 400% over the last 100 years.
Say that one more time. I think that deserves another.
And I say last 100 years when NAFTA was implemented in 1995, but the chart that I'm looking at goes from 1913
Right.
And right around 1993, and especially between 93 and 2003, that's where the biggest spike. But it says NAFTA has increased the wealth of the top 1% by 400%.
There it is. And it's important for people to understand that, because...
And that says free trade is a huge boom for only the wealthiest of the wealthy.
There it is.
And that's the bottom line.
There it is. Yeah. It, precisely. So we have to ask ourselves, too, where do we stand here in this fight right now for our lives? And I think that looking at this, we are in the fight of our lives, folks.
Yes, we are. You know that...
That
what came out today, that under Obama... And then wait, my computer's freezing up. Every minute, there's $100 million added to our debt of every day. Every minute.
Well, yeah.
$100 million.
You know, but it didn't start with Obama. It started long before that. And of course, you had the Iran or the war against Iraq.
But since we started
Iraq
the show, that's $4.8 billion.
It's,
I mean, that's just crazy.
It's unsustainable, and of course Ross Powell is going to talk about that in an upcoming segment here. But the fact of the matter is, we've got to understand here. We're in the fight of our lives. We've got the globalists being exposed. When I say, let me qualify what I said earlier. When I say we're winning the information war, the war of information, you can see where the globalists are engaged in damage control. You know, in a football game, you play offense or defense. You don't play both at the same time, I suppose.
Well, there's special teams.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. We have the ball, it seems, the people who are pushing the information to the masses. Now you've got the masses who are otherwise busy, you know, putting food on the table and don't listen, can't listen, working two jobs, you know, and so on, trying to just survive in the environment created by the globalists through programs like NAFTA or because of programs like NAFTA. But then you've got the others who are the entitlement mentality, mm-hmm. and the millennials. What a bunch of selfish people who want everything right away and have no understanding of delayed gratification, have no understanding of what it means to work hard. And those are the people that we see as useful idiots and tools of the globalists out there causing the trouble. But what I mean by winning the information war is the new media, that this media, this show, and other shows like it, we are pushing the globalists into a position of having to play defense. That's what I'm saying. Okay, anytime you have the ball and you can advance the ball downfield, the score of the game might be really lopsided against you, but we're winning at least in this part of the game. And that's why I want to clarify that.
And there are a few shows pushing out there that do that,
yes,
with the truth and yeah, with the answers that
exactly
do it for furthering, you know, and bettering people's lives other than themselves and yeah, secret agendas. And I'm going to correct something. It wasn't every second. It was every hour. Or every minute. It was every hour. $100 million.
Every day, and it's unsustainable.
Yeah. Under Barack Obama, national debt increases $100 million every hour of every day.
Yep.
And it goes on to say that what took other presidents more than 200 years to do, Barack Obama has done in 1 year and continues doing it year in and year out. That being spending over $1 trillion or adding $1 trillion every year to the national debt.
That's right.
And, you know, that's just a staggering fact. And as you said, Ross Powell from Survival 401k will be on with us to talk about some of this. Now, while we have a few minutes left before the break, socialist experiment. Venezuela in ruins as soldiers delete videos of 12-hour food lines. A BBC journalist who attempted to film the crisis was stopped and forced by soldiers to delete footage of a protest outside a supermarket as desperate Venezuelans waited for food. The crowd shouted, "We want to buy stuff," as they grouped outside the store in the country's capital. BBC journalist Vladimir Hernandez reports that many people approached him to say They had queued for 12 hours without being able to buy what they wanted.
They stood in line, of course.
In the short clip, the crew were warned by a demonstrator that they had been spotted by members of the Venezuelan army, who then proceeded to delete the footage. So as we see, there is no slowing down to the socialist chaos that is starving Venezuela, literally taking the food right out of their mouth, and it is only going to get worse from there. We have also a warning from Ron Paul. Folks, remember former Texas Congressman Ron Paul?
Yep.
Americans are going to be disappointed in this election outcome, he says. It is a sad commentary on the state of the political life in the U.S. that our political conventions have become more like rock music festivals than a competition of ideas. And Ron Paul has come out and made a few statements about the country, the state of the country, and where he sees this going. He goes on to say through Ron Paul via the Institute of Peace and Prosperity, says that there is disturbingly absent is any mention of how we got in this crisis and how we can get out of it from either side of the aisle or from either candidate. Clinton, in her convention speech, promised that she would fight terrorism and defeat ISIS by doing more of what we have been doing all along. Bombing. They bombed more than 50,000. They've dropped more than 50,000 bombs on ISIS in Iraq and Syria over the past 2 years, and all she can say is that she will drop more. How many bombs will defeat ISIS? How many more years will she keep us in our longest war, Afghanistan? She doesn't say. And Afghanistan is the longest war in U.S. history.
And the most, going on by far, the most expensive. Years.
Yes. And is it not irony that we were the ones behind helping the Mujahideen or Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda against the Russians?
That's right.
As Russia tried to went to war with Afghanistan, and in a Vietnam-style war, like we see with the U.S. and Afghanistan, there is no winner 13 years in. And I think it's less of a war and more of a drug money operation than anything else. As heroin has produced, you know, thousandfold in Afghanistan since we have been over there, and it continues to grow.
The drug operation, the drug running operation by the Western intelligence agencies, including and especially the CIA and the weapons running operations, are just ridiculous.
As we talked about, you know, where do these drugs go? Because the doctors aren't well, you know, right. giving them to people who need them, and
it's on the streets to cause okay.
Right.
And one day we're going to have to do a show about this, because yes. those people who are in need of
state-run rehab facilities, just
can't get it.
It's a money-making operation, and that's what it's all about. It's
Indeed
not about
it
healing disease. It's not about getting people better. It's about getting federal grant money and other monies allocated for recovery programs.
That's right. And a recap. And a recap, folks. Rush Limbaugh breaks his heretofore silence, admitting Benghazi. Yes. What are we doing there? Apparently needed the 17,000 emails about Libya to be convinced that, yeah, we were running drugs or arming ISIS there in Libya. Gang of Eight, full knowledge, from Devin Nunes to Nancy Pelosi to Paul Ryan and John Boehner. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Hagman and Hagman Report. Doug Hagman with Joe Hagman, America's premier investigative father-son reporting team. We so glad you joined us. So glad to have you. Stay right with us.